Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad talks with Venezuelan counterpart Hugo Chavez. Tehran's call on the Al-Khalifa regime to end its violent crackdown on Bahrain's peaceful protesters. The Egyptian demonstrators sit in into the fifth day against the ruling military junta. And a Zionist killing of at least three more Palestinians, including a six-year-old boy. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, hello everyone, and welcome to this edition of IRIN and English News with me, Nima Chitsas. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has arrived in the Venezuelan capital of Caracas and was welcomed by his counterpart, Hugo Chavez. President Ahmadinejad headed to Caracas after participating in the Rio Plus 20 summit in Brazil. Addressing reporters upon arrival in Caracas, President Ahmadinejad said, "Justice and freedom-seeking nations such as Iran and Venezuela will develop their countries based on the pinnacles of progress free from imperialist domination." Pointing out that a resistance movement has taken shape in the world today, Ahmadinejad said, "Undoubtedly, freedom-seeking nations will emerge as victorious."
I'm sure that this wave of revolution that covers all of Latin America will continue until it eradicates all the roots of imperialism.
Later on Saturday, the Iranian president called on justice-seeking nations to form a united front against hegemonic powers and global imperialism. Addressing a meeting with high-ranking Venezuelan officials, President Ahmadinejad said, "All nations should cooperate in establishing a new world order based on justice and freedom to help achieve dignity and progress." He said the Western powers have mobilized their forces to confront independent nations under various pretexts, such as human rights and democracy, to prevent their progress. He said the plots of the global arrogance would leave no impact on the will of nations which are determined to attain dignity and development. Referring to the growing ties between Iran and Venezuela, Ahmadinejad said, "There are suitable grounds for expansion of all-out relations between the two countries in agriculture, industry, trade, science, technology, housing, and energy." For his part, the Venezuelan president lauded the upward trend of cooperation between the two countries. President Chavez said the Venezuelan government and nation, with reliance on their own capabilities and making use of the capabilities of their friends, are determined to attain more development. He also slammed the U.S.-led sanctions against Iran, pledging his country's all-out support for Tehran in the face of the existing Western injustices. Later in the day, President Ahmadinejad inaugurated 384 residential units constructed by Iranian companies in Venezuela. The residential units were inaugurated via video conference on the sideline of the talks held between the two countries' high-ranking delegations. During the inauguration ceremony, President Ahmadinejad voiced Iran's willingness to share its experience in the field of housing construction with the Venezuelan nation. For his part, President Chavez said the inauguration of the joint housing project would boost the two countries' relations. In September 2011, Venezuelan housing officials signed a contract with Iran for the construction of 17,000 housing units. In addition, over the past 5 years, Iran and Venezuela have signed several contracts for joint investments in oil and gas projects. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman says the recent meeting between the Iranian and British foreign ministers took place after a formal request by Britain. Rami Mehmandparast made the remark after the British government claimed that the Iranian side had requested the meeting. Mehmandparast called such wrong claims a departure from diplomatic norms. He said Iran's concern about its citizens' Council of Rights and Britain prompted Foreign Minister Salehi to agree to meet his British counterpart. The meeting between Iranian Foreign Minister Salehi and his British counterpart William Hague took place on June 14 on the sideline of a regional conference on Afghan security held in Kabul. The meeting was the highest level contact between the two countries after the closure of their embassies last year. Elsewhere, the Iranian spokesman condemned the continuation of violent and repressive measures taken by the Al-Khalifa regime against peaceful protests in Bahrain. Mehman Paras also expressed deep concern over the regime attacks on Friday on a number of Bahraini opposition leaders. The leader of Bahrain's main opposition group, Al-Wafaq, was injured on Friday after police opened fire on a peaceful protest in the Bahraini capital of Manama. Mehman Paras expressed hope that the Bahraini government would change its violent crackdown on peaceful protests and instead respond to the people's legitimate demands. Pakistani Prime Minister-elect Raja Pervez Ashraf says he would do his best to improve ties with neighbors, including Iran. Ashraf made a remark during his first address in the National Assembly or the lower house of parliament following his election. Ashraf said, Pakistan wants good relations with its neighbors, Afghanistan, Iran, and India, based on peaceful coexistence. The newly elected prime minister further stated that Pakistan intends to play a key role in preempting security in Afghanistan. Ashraf was elected as Pakistan's prime minister after former Premier Gilani was disqualified by the Supreme Court due to his conviction of contempt. And now a few brief news. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Saeed Jalili, who is Iran's chief negotiator, briefed at the country's Expediency Council on Saturday on the latest round of talks between Iran and the P5+1 group held in Moscow on June 18 and 19. According to reports, members of the Expediency Council highlighted Iran's right to peaceful use of nuclear energy. The EC members also expressed their full support for the stance adopted by the Iranian delegation at the talks. The Ecuadorian ambassador to London is expected to fly to our country within a day or two for talks on request for asylum from WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Assange has been at the Ecuadorian embassy in London since Tuesday and is seeking political asylum in the country to prevent from being extradited to Sweden. The Ecuadorian ambassador to Britain, Anna Alvin, met with representatives of the British government on Wednesday morning. Assange faces arrest for breaching the terms of his bail if he leaves the Ecuadorian embassy. And total number of Iran's CNG fueling stations has reached 1,908 stations, while the country's CNG supply capacity rose to 2.32 million cubic meters per hour. At present, Iran ranks fourth in the world in terms of the number of CNG fueling stations after Pakistan, China, and Argentina. There are 2.8 million CNG-consuming vehicles in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Last year, CNG fueling stations supplied 16 million cubic meters of fuel per day to reduce gasoline consumption in the country. Iran's annual petrochemical output has risen from 20 million tons to 54 million tons over the last 7 years. According to official reports, during the period from 2005 to 2012, 38 major petrochemical projects came on stream in Iran. Recently, the CEO of Iran's national petrochemical company, Abdul Hussein Bayot, said, new investments and commissioning of new projects will change Iran into a leading petrochemical power in the region in the coming years. According to Bayot, more than 70 petrochemical projects are going to be implemented in the country by 2015 at about $50 billion investment. Petrochemical products accounted for about 43% of Iran's non-oil exports last year. Egyptian demonstrators continued their sit-in into the fifth successive day on Saturday in protest against the ruling military junta. The protesters called on the generals to hand over power to the presumed winner of the presidential election, Mohamed Morsi. Tensions soared last week when the country's military-appointed election commission indefinitely delayed announcing the results of the election and disbanded the parliament on Wednesday.
The sitting is open-ended until the reversing of the supplement constitutional declaration, until the canceling of the latest ministerial decision that gives wide powers to the military officers to arrest civilians, and until canceling the disbanding of parliament.
The military is afraid to leave power because there are a lot of hidden stakes they will be held accountable for and to put more pressure on the people.
And here's a recap of our top stories. The Iranian and Venezuelan presidents vow to continue their campaign against imperialism. Taiwan urges the Al-Khalifa regime to end its violent crackdown on Bahrain's peaceful protesters. Egyptian demonstrators continue their sit-in into the fifth day against the ruling military junta. And at least three more Palestinians, including a six-year-old boy, are killed in continued daily Zionist bombing of the Gaza Strip. Now, Turkey and Syria said their navies were jointly searching on Saturday for Turkish airmen shot down by Syria over the Mediterranean Sea. Signals from both sides suggested neither wanted a military confrontation over Friday's shooting down of a warplane in the Syrian territorial waters. However, the joint operation will clearly sit uneasily with both forces, given the soured relation of the two former allies over Turkey's all-out support for the rebels in Syria. Meanwhile, many Syrians on Saturday spoke out in support of the move by the Syrian armed forces.
We support the Syrian government in its decision to confront the Turkish plane or any opposition planes. They have to be aware of the difficult Syrian situation.
Syria is an independent state, and the incident of the Turkish warplane entering Syrian airspace is a violation of its sovereignty. For this, Syria has dealt with it firmly and with all seriousness. If it was a message meant to be delivered from Turkey to Syria, I think the reply was very clear. And if it was a mistake, we cannot hold Syria responsible for every detail related to the shooting down. In the end, we hope we will have good relations with Turkey, because Turkish people are our friends.
Iraqi Foreign Minister Hoshyar Zebaria on Saturday warned that the recent escalation of tensions between Syria and Turkey could be spilling over to the entire region. Zebaria made the comments in meeting with visiting foreign ministers from Sweden, Poland and Bulgaria, and a day after Syria shut down a Turkish military plane on Friday.
Of course there is an escalation, as we saw in the last few days. The shelling, the indiscriminate shelling of civilian residential areas in downtown cities, the targeting of the civilians, the increase of the number of the victims of the peaceful demonstrators, and also the flood or the defections of a Syrian pilot with his plane to Jordan, and the shooting down yesterday of a Turkish aircraft over Syrian territorial waters. This is a serious escalation and indications that the conflict would have far bigger impact than Syria itself.
Meanwhile, President Bashar al-Assad on Saturday formed the country's new government. The Syrian president appointed Riyad Farid Hajjab as the country's newly prime minister, while Foreign Minister Walid al-Mualim, Defense Minister Daoud Rajha, and Interior Minister Mohammad Ashar retained their posts. The move comes following recent general elections, as the anti-Syrian Western governments have been calling for the overthrow of President Assad. This is while a New York Times report has revealed that some U.S. and Arab spy agents are operating secretly in southern Turkey, encouraging anti-Syrian rebels to launch violent attacks on government forces. The report out about Turkey, Saudi Arabia and Qatar are also paying for the transport of weapons into Syria. In another report released by the Guardian newspaper, the Saudi regime is accused of financially supporting the anti-Syrian rebels to launch more attacks against the government. The report said the plan has been agreed on by the authorities in Riyadh and Washington, as well as representatives from a number of other Arab regimes. The Guardian also said that Turkey has followed the establishment of a command center in Istanbul, which is coordinating supply lines for the rebels inside Syria. Three more Palestinians were killed in the continued daily air attacks by the Zionist regime in Gaza on Saturday. A Palestinian man was killed in an airstrike on the besieged Gaza Strip a few hours after a 25-year-old Gazan died in an assassination drone attack conducted by the Tel Aviv regime. The second attack targeted the 42-year-old victim while he was riding a motorcycle near Gaza City. 17 other Gaza residents were also injured in that attack. Also on Saturday, a 6-year-old Palestinian boy was killed and two others injured in an attack by a Zionist regime's warplane. And that's a wrap for now. Goodbye.